You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, powered by Diaga.ie and proudly sponsored by Flomax. Be sure to check out our brand new website, BetweenTheStripes.ie, while you can find us on Twitter at Between Stripes or on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Now, here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, series 3, episode 10. It's Kieran Burke and John Breyer in studio once again. John, do you want to tell us who we have on the show tonight?
Well, we have a cracking show ahead because we've got Mike Ahern, which is an exclusive, and we're going to find out the latest at Limerick, talk about players going on strike and... dire situation down there, Kieran.
Yeah, so that story regarding players' wages, there's an article up on BetweenTheStripes.ie, you can read that, but I'd actually suggest you go and check out Mike Ahern's Twitter handle, and I'm sure that's somewhere on our Between the Stripes page. In regards to this show, there should be his handle should be there. Mike was the one that broke the story. It was actually broken during Between the Stripes Matchday Live's coverage of Shelburne and Limerick the other night. Mike left a comment in to say that the players had been unpaid, and today now there's stories emerging that the players may go on strike, so we're going to speak to Mike about that. Our other two guests tonight, we speak to Gary Shaw, the St. Pat's striker, and we also have James Rogers on to preview what could be the game of the season so far on Friday night in Oriel Park between Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers. But John, we'll get straight into our Premier Division review before we go to any of those great interviews that are coming up, and we'll start with Friday's fixtures first. And Shamrock Rovers went to the Brandywell and they came away with all 3 points. We said last week if they could do that, it was the sort of result that signals they could be champions this year.
Well, doesn't it just? And there's not many teams go to Derry at the moment and get 3 points, but Rovers obviously managed that. And it was a busy weekend of action, Kieran. But Lee Grace, he had a good chance early on, but he headed over from that man who's on fire at the moment, a Jack Byrne free kick. McNamee crossed, Junior headed just wide under pressure. I've been quite impressed with that lad, Junior. He seems to be playing well.
Yeah, a bit of flair about him. He played recently in that EA Sports Cup tie against Longford, and he was very, very impressive. And he's broken into the team now in the last couple of weeks. Just has something a little bit different about him. Very, very good with the ball at his feet, not afraid to take players on. So it gives Derry that little bit of an X factor going forward.
One to watch, Kieran.
Yeah, most definitely.
The only goal in this game came from Aaron Green, but Derry were caught out. They were a very high back line at this stage, and they were caught out, and he took advantage to give them the lead and what turned out to be the eventual winner.
That was a little bit like the Derry City back four of last season, John.
Well, I think it'd have been an individual error if that had been the case. Well, but
they were very, very high.
They were very high, yeah.
Good finish from Green. You know, there's been question marks over whether he can be the man to lead the line, but he had time to think about that, and that can often be dangerous as a striker, but picked his corner and put it away well.
Parkhouse, he shot at Manus after more good work from Junior, and we saw a great run near the end from Dan Carr, which led to a chance for Joel Coolstrain, but that was well saved by the goalkeeper. Rovers been delighted to get the 3 points there, Kieran.
Yeah, big statement of intent, as we said, but that's why I think last night's result was all the more surprising. Rovers going in with a great run of form, 8 league wins in a row. Surely thinking this was the time at home in front of a packed out Talla Stadium to go and end this horrific run of results they've had against Bohemians. But look, we'll speak about that fixture shortly when we're going through the midweek results. We'll move on to the next one. Dundalk, they kept in touch with Rovers at the top with a 3-0 win at home to Finn Harps.
Pretty straightforward this one, Kieran, and it was the Daniel Kelly show this one.
Yeah, Kelly's done very, very well since he came in. Played on Easter Monday again against UCD. It was very impressive. Went off with a slight knock, but according to reports, not too serious. So hopefully he should be fit to face the Rovers on Friday. But Harps could have opened the score on this one. A great save from Gary Rogers. He's had his critics down the years, Rogers, but for me, he makes very, very important saves for Dundalk in the early parts of the season. You could accredit him with quite a few points down the years.
Yeah, had a good game here, and his first save from... It seems to be a good goal threat at the moment. Daniel O'Reilly.
Seems to be one of their only goal threats, unfortunately.
Yeah, Duffy pulled back. That was the first goal for Kelly. Good work from Duffy. He's looking dangerous as ever again.
Yeah, he's back to his best.
Harps nearly got back into this. Mikey Placed, he nearly equalised, but again, Rogers was up to the task. He saved
That was a bit more of a standard save, but a good little spin and turn from Mikey Placed. Definitely... a player that's shown glimpses since he's come into the league, but again, it was standard enough save for Rodgers in the end.
Kelly and indeed Dundalk got the second early on in the second half. Bit of a scramble one, that one. That's
yeah, but the finish was tasty.
Yeah, a decent finish, yeah. The third came from a decent ball from Pat Hoob, and it made it three. They could have had a fourth near the end, but they stumbled really when he had a great chance. But yeah, pretty straightforward. They won't get many more straightforward victories like that, I don't think, this season, Dundalk. But Harps, where do we go with Harps, Kieran?
Yeah, we might talk a little bit more on Harps when we get down to the Monday fixtures, because that was another defeat and another... they drew a blank yet again, this time at home. So very, very worrying for Finn Harps supporters at the moment. We'll move along, because this was a huge headline on Friday night. Waterford 2, Cork City 0, to pile more pressure on John Caulfield.
The pressure is piling on indeed. And, you know, we talked in the last podcast there, Kieran, about possible relegation candidates.
Mm.
And I'm not seeing anything that's disproven it.
No goal threat at all at the moment. I think Darragh Connor has been probably the only shining light so far for Cork this season. Looks very, very talented, that young player, but he's not getting a lot of help at the moment.
No. Well, look, McNulty, he played pretty well this match. He saved from a Kevin Lynch free kick early on. Gary Buckley actually thought he'd open the scoring for Cork, but that was ruled offside. At the other end, El Bouzedi, he should have scored after a trademark through ball by Bastian Heary, but inexplicably lofted his shot over the bar. That was a bad miss.
Yeah, great ball from Heary.
Yeah. Second half, though, Waterford really on top in this. McNulty save from Duggan, but after that, it was a great strike to open the scoring from Duggan. Long ranger, 1-0.
Yeah, and he's actually scored from that almost identical position before with a previous club against Cork. So it's amazing how things come around like that.
And then the cherry on top of the cake, or a late breakaway, allowed El Bouzedi to make it 2-0, and dismal times for Cork.
I'm not sure who the tracking defender was of El Bouzedi, but my God, he left him eating his dust, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Good player, that lad.
Yeah, he looks a real, real talent. One of many. It's great to see so many talented young players, particularly attacking players. There's a lot of good wingers starting to emerge in the league. Although you could argue maybe he's not your traditional winger. He likes to cut inside and get shots away. So he's definitely one to watch. But for Cork City...
Good runner with the ball, I have to say. Yeah, he's very talented.
For Cork, another disastrous result. Obviously, last week on the show... just as we went live, the initial statement was released by the FAI regarding the possibility of Waterford maybe not taking their place in Europe. That's obviously since been confirmed. What's your take on that whole situation?
Well, to be honest, it's right, because the rules are the rules, Kieran. And, you know, Waterford's, obviously, they're a Phoenix-type club, so, you know, they're quite within the rights. But what a shambles, though. This should have been sorted out at the beginning of the season.
I know what you're saying, that they're a Phoenix club, but... I'm not sure. There's a lot of legal technicalities here. I don't think probably either of us are in a position to say whether they pass certain regulations or
I'll
not.
I'll tell you who were in a position at the start of the season. The FAI.
That's exactly where I was going. And Alan Reynolds himself pointed to this in the interview. For this to come out 10 to 11 games into a season and not in pre-season is an absolute and utter disgrace. It's not yet another... chain on the FAI, their shambolic reign over domestic football in this country, and hopefully that's going to be sorted sooner rather than later. But for Waterford, I feel so sorry for their fans. You know, we're getting excited over a trip to Bala on Friday.
Yeah,
these guys probably planning trips God knows where in their head. It's not going to happen now. Great for St. Pat's, but for Waterford, you've got to feel very sorry for them. And there's question marks over what this might mean financially in the long run for the club, and that's probably the main point that comes out of this.
Yeah, I think it would have been worse if it had been obviously Champions League, because there's a lot of money associated with that, Kieran, especially if you can get through a round or two and drop down.
We're talking 240,000 here.
You are, massive money,
I suppose. Regardless of what league it is, it is massive money for a club like Waterford, who ran up quite a bit last season, pushing for that European place. So again, big question marks over maybe the club and how they're going to react to this, but I think that's probably all we can say on that for now. We'll move along to our next fixture. Bohemians had what looks on paper a comfortable 3-0 win over UCD at home. But UCD in the first half, they could have put this game to bed.
Yeah, and indeed the woodwork was rattled quite early on by Yo-Yo. He hit the bar Well, it was. I think Talbot saved it, actually.
Talbot definitely saved it onto the bar. And he's been a fantastic signing, that young goalkeeper that we had on the show here a couple of weeks ago.
He has. He's certainly made that spot his own. And he's been really good. I know the coaches there really rate him, don't they?
He mightn't be there too long. He could be back away to England where he's playing at the moment.
Yeah. And then Ferrugia, he had a shot again, but he went direct to Talbot, and Talbot saved that. But really, as far as UCD got, then it was Bose took over this match, really. Bit of a soft penalty, I thought, Kieran.
Yeah, I have to agree. Very soft, and it was a big turning point in the game.
Yeah, Grant went down, Dinny Corcoran safe as houses with a penalty, 1-0.
As soft as the penalty was, though, you have to credit Grant, and he's a player I highlighted, I think, on last week's show.
You did.
I've highlighted him on commentary a few times. He's got incredible pace when he gets down the outside, and then just at the last moment, he'll cut across the front of the defender, and he'll look for that contact, and I don't mean that in a disparagery way. He'll look to get across the defender. That's what you're taught to do as a winger. And he got the decision this time, and, you know, Bowes took the lead and never looked back.
And it was his cross to Conor Livingstone that, with a neat finish that made it 2-0.
Lovely finish.
He's been a bit a player that we haven't really talked about this season, Conor Livingstone, and he's playing very well.
James Donnelly gave him man of the match when I had James on commentary with me for that game against St. Pat's a few weeks ago. He was very impressed with him. Very tidy passer to football. Has a good physical build about him as well. Mm. So he's one to watch, definitely. He's coming into form now at the moment.
Speaking of a man to watch, that man, Mandreu, he hit the post, but ball bounced to Grant, and he made it 3-0, and that was game over.
Yeah, we'll be speaking a little bit more about that man when we review last night's Dublin derby, because he was on fire last night. Moving along to the final fixture from the Friday set, and that is St. Pat's 2, Sligo Rovers 1.
And I have to say, great to see Chris Forrester back in action.
And it was a real trademark
goal. Looking like his old self.
Trademark Forrester goal.
Yeah, lovely. It's just like a little chip over the keeper, wasn't it? Yeah. But from some distance out. And I think he wanted to stick the odd finger up at his critics with that one.
Yeah, well, as you said, it's great to see him back starting to score goals like that. And hopefully we're going to see performances to match.
But I have to say, Pat's looked very good. It was all Pat's first half, Kieran. Very, very dominant performance there. And Drennan had a chance as well to make it 2. But he shot at Mitchell Beeney, who kept the scoreline down.
Yeah,
he was
busy, Beeney.
Yeah, yeah. Penalty. Drennan brought down. Possible dive, did you think?
Not sure on that one, John. Not sure.
Yeah. Well, Buckley was outraged, I think, over it. But look, he got up and scored it to make it 2-0. Beeney saved from Clifford before half-time. Like I say, it could have been a fair few goals in before half-time even when this one.
Clifford's one player, though, I would like to highlight, because I think he's been something of an unsung performer for Pats this season. He's just playing in a deep-lying midfield role, and he's just playing the simple passes and keeping the team ticking over, and he's shown his ability to score from long range now as well. So I think he's coming back to his best as well, which is really good to see, because obviously he's had a difficult couple of years.
I think Pats would have been disappointed not to kill this game off, and his Sligo got a consolation, but it was at the end through David Corley. But the disappointing from Sligo, but Pats needed that one.
Yeah, and good to see the reaction from the Pats back four and their goalkeeper. They were absolutely furious to concede that one and not keep the clean sheet. So you always like to see that from your defensive players. But Pats are starting to just get back on track now. And we're going to hear from one of the players that's come into the team recently and has had a big impact. And that, of course, is the former Shamrock Rovers and Longford Town man, among others. It's Gary Shaw. St. Pat's striker Gary Shaw joins us on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Gary, welcome to the show.
How's things, lads?
Good to have you, Gary. So I suppose it's fair to say things starting to come together now at St. Pat's after a slightly slow start to the season. 2 wins on the bounce, only 3 points off 4th. Fair to say it's finally starting to click now?
Yeah, you can say that. Obviously, we started off really well against Cork. And then we went through a bit of a sticky patch in a couple of games we should have been winning. And we kind of picked ourselves back up and would win against Dundalk, and that kind of got us going again. And like you said, we've 2 wins on the bounce now, and we're going into UCD at home on Friday, looking to win that and take us into Monday's game against Rovers. So yeah, it is starting to click, as you said, and I'm delighted that I'm involved in starting and playing, and that's the main thing, winning and playing. So can't complain at all now.
Yeah, we've just sat down to start recording the show here, and we actually didn't realise there was another double set of fixtures coming up now again this week. How demanding is this month, I suppose, coming ahead, even for full-time clubs like St. Pat's?
Yeah, you sit down at the start of the month and you're kind of scratching your head and thinking, you know, what's going on with all the fixtures? And I don't know how many in total we have in April, but it really is just so important that, you know, as a full-time player, you're focusing everything on your recovery after games, and it's all about your nutrition and hydration and all. It's been drilled into us because, you know, the games are so demanding, and you're only getting, you know, 48 hours, whatever it is, in between Friday and Monday, and you're going up to places like Finn Harps, 3.5 hours on a bus for us, and you're getting off and you're playing again after playing a tough game on the Friday, and it's crazy, but it's just part parcel of the league now. You know, I've been in the league 9-10 years now at this stage, and I'm well aware of what happens at certain points in the season, and you just got to get on with it, I suppose. There's no point in sitting and complaining, because, you know, we've tried that and it doesn't seem to get us anywhere. So we just got to keep going, and, you know, as long as we're winning, it'll make the legs feel a bit fresher in the next game.
And obviously yourself and Mikey Drennan have both been on the score sheets in recent weeks. So you're hoping the boss maybe sticks with the two up front now going forward?
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. You know, at the start of the season when I saw, you know, he signed myself and then he signed Mikey, you know, I was kind of licking my lips at that partnership again, because we had a short stint at Rovers, never really obviously got going, obviously because of Mikey took time out of the game. But we started off playing a 4-3-3 formation, and it was only room for one striker at that stage, obviously. And then neither of us see ourselves as wingers, so there was only one position there. And after a little sticky patch we had, Harry decided to change it up and go 3-5-2 and bring the two of us in. And in the last couple of games, we've played really well, and we've both scored. And, you know, we're starting to create chances now. That was the big issue kind of halfway through that. That was the sticky part. We just weren't creating chances, and we weren't, you know, testing teams in the final third. We've worked a lot on the training pitch at different patterns of play and movements with myself and Mikey and the midfield and behind us. So I think it's all starting to click, as you said there previously, and we need to keep that momentum going now and take it into UCD on Friday, and obviously go again then Monday.
Yeah, I think a few of us tipped Pats to do very well at the start of the season, but it seems to be a real sticky start. So what seems to have changed? It seems that some players are really starting to come into form now. Do you just put that down to formation change, or is it just down to time at the club for some of the new players?
Yeah, obviously, look, there was a new manager. There was a whole new squad, really, if you look at it. And Harry just wasn't really finding he has a great bunch of players, but he just wasn't really getting the best out of certain players in certain positions, and he was chopping and changing. And if things were working one week, that didn't seem to work the next week. And it just took a lot of work on the training pitch and just a bit of video analysis and seeing what way our game was developing throughout a match. And we kind of just, you know, plucked different things out, and we just kind of put it all together then and you know, kind of settled on a formation and worked hard on that and focused on the strengths of it, and then, you know, worked on the weaknesses that we had. But I think the setup what we have now and the personnel involved are really, you know, really clicking, and we're getting to know each other's way of playing the game and the movements off the ball and on the ball and what we do when we're in possession and out of possession, working hard to get the ball back. So it's all coming together, and everyone's getting a good understanding from manager to coach right down to player as well. So I think it just took that bit of time to get that. We're, 11, 12 fixtures in now. So, look, by no means is a league over. You can just see now we're overs. You know, they look like they were running away with the league, and all of a sudden, you know, they lose Friday and we go and we could beat them on Monday. Things just completely change. So it's by no means over. We're obviously a bit off, but we're definitely still, you know, on the right road at the moment.
Yeah, let's talk about this game against UCD on Friday, because I was at the Bowl on Monday and I was very, very impressed by UCD despite their defeat to Dundalk on what was a dreadful pitch. So I'm sure you're not underestimating the students at all ahead of this game on Friday.
No, we played them in the Bowl there earlier on the season, and we drew 1-1 with them, and they just have no fear. That's what it is, and they've great camaraderie. You know, they're all in college together. They're together every day. They're like a full time club basically. And then you know, just on the ball, off the ball, Colley has them working hard in possession, out of possession, and you know they have good talent there. You have obviously the captain Gary O'Neill in the middle, and right through the spine of the squad. And I just saw today that I think Man City are taking two of them on trial, something along those lines. But it just shows you the talent that that the squad has. So they're definitely not to be. You know, you don't take them for granted because they're a college side, and they're far better than that. And it'll be a tough game, and you know we gotta try and get the 3 points because, as you said, we need to start building momentum now and getting ourselves up the table.
Yeah, I suppose you could draw a lot of similarities between UCD and St. Pat's, because you look at the students and they have a goal threat from all over the park. The likes of Yo-Yo Madden, Neil Ferrugia, Connor Davis, there's Gary O'Neill, as you've mentioned. There's multiple players there that can chip in with goals, and we've been saying the same about St. Pat's when we looked at the players that came in there. The fullbacks really get forward, and you obviously have the likes of Christy Forrester, yourself and Mikey. So two sides well capable of scoring from all over the park.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you named off a list of players, and we just got to take our chances on the night. This is what it's going to come down to. You know, it killed us earlier on the season. We weren't scoring enough, and we were struggling in front of goal. And at the end of the day, it's about taking your chances when they come, because if you don't do that, you know it comes back to bite you. And like I said, UCD will have chances in the game. They have good players there, and you know it'll be a tough one, but you know we'll be ready for it.
And obviously this was a big move for yourself in the off-season too, St. Pat's, after a decent spell with Shamrock Rovers. But you've played under some very different managers, the likes of Tony Cousins and Stephen Bradley and now Harry Kenny. What's Harry like? He seems to be quite a jovial character.
Yeah, Harry's great. You know, I had dealings with him previously when I was working in the FEI, and knows a couple of his brothers as well. So they're all the same, all the Kennys. They're gas characters. But when Harry means business, he means it. And you know, you don't want to get on Harry's bad side, because he has plenty to say. But he also, you know, he can put the arm around you and, you know, give you that bit of confidence boost that you might need if things are tough, or you know, they might be going your way. He has that belief in you, and you know, he just gets the best out of you. And that was a big reason why, you know, I heard so much about Harry, what he's like, especially when he was at Bray. You know, he had a you know, an average enough Bray side, but he done so well with them, and the lads there that I've been speaking to just said he just gets the best out of you. And you know, when I heard that, that's what I needed after the season, the last season I had with Rovers, because I obviously had a bad injury and I couldn't really get it right, and I couldn't get into the team, and I was just coming on and off, and I just kind of needed that bit of a confidence booster and someone that would say, you know, listen, you're going to play in the position I wanted to play in, and go score goals and do this. And Harry's done that, and he's playing me now, and he's filling me with confidence every week. So you know, I'm delighted.
And of course, we couldn't let you go without asking you about your favourite club in Ireland, Longford Town. You'll be delighted to know the Section O lads are still singing your name on the buses down to Cove and all over the country. So you're fondly remembered. But what have you made of the town start to the season?
Yes, yeah, it's been brilliant. Obviously, it was a long old trip down to Cove there over the weekend, and it was a nil all. But it's going to be a tough league to win. A lot of teams are doing well, and when you think they're starting to get momentum, then they'll go and lose a game and throw wide open again. So it'll be a tough league to come out on top of. But look, I'll be always keep an eye on how Longford do, because obviously I had 4 great years there, and have a great relationship with the people there and the fans, and I still talk to a lot of the players that won that league in 2014, which was, you know, a big year for me personally. And you know, great memories from Longford. So I'll always have a favouritism towards them, and hopefully they can go on and do it, because great club, great people, and they deserve to be back in the Premier Division.
No better way to end an interview, John Breyer.
Absolutely.
Gary, absolute pleasure as always. Thanks very much for joining us, and best of luck this weekend.
Thanks very much for having me, lads.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
So on to Monday and Tuesday's Premier Division fixtures, John. Shamrock Rovers, the jinx continues in the Dublin Derby, defeated by Bohemians by 1-0. Rovers reduced to 9 men in the first half.
And what do they say? It's only gone and happened again. So, yeah, 2 red cards early on, Kieran. Clark and Grace. Clark's looked, yep, red, but Grace...
At first, I actually didn't think Clark's was red.
Really?
It looked like there was a defender getting on the cover, but then I've watched it a few times back and I've kind of been following a bit of the commentary on it. And if the tackle isn't made, he's getting a shot away on goal. So I think you probably do have to just produce the red card. As for Grace, definitely not handball, so obviously not a red card, but you cannot criticise the referee because every single person watching that game, both in the stadium and on the television, thought that ball hit his hand. His hand was above his head, so he's put himself in that situation.
I think it's the unnatural hand placement, isn't it? You know, that's
again, it didn't touch his hand at all, but it looked for all the world it did. So by putting your hand in that position, you're opening yourself up to that type of a situation. Hard luck on Rovers, but early on in the game, I thought Bowes were by far the better side.
Yeah, Rovers did well with 9 men.
Yeah, you have to give credit to Rovers for sticking in there and they threw everything at it to try and get back in the game. But in truth, Bowes had several chances on the break to kill the game off and I think Bowes were more than deserving winners on the night.
How much would Rovers love Dinny Corcoran up front?
Well, I made this point last night. They do need some type of a target man because when they went down to 9, they just had no outlet. And people said to me, well, that's not the problem when you're down to 9 because you can't get the ball up there.
Yeah.
You know, a pressure relieving pass up to a big man like Corcoran that can get it down, hold it up, let his midfielders and his fullbacks come up and support. Rovers were really lacking that last night. Bowes were fantastic again, I have to say. Mandreu, what a player he is, but he's just one of a number of top youngsters coming through there, Bowes. You have to credit the job Keith Long and Trevor Crowley are doing there. Absolutely amazing. So I'm going to put the question to you now, John. Bowes, genuine title contenders, yes or no?
I'm going to say no, Kieran. And it's purely because I think of the part-time status. I don't think a part-time team can win this league.
The argument to that is, and many people have made it because obviously we put up a poll last night on our Twitter at Between Stripes and we put it up on our facebook.com/Between the Stripes asking that very question, and it's split 50-50 on both polls. It's absolutely unbelievable the reaction that's got. But the argument people were making was Bowes rested 7 first team players when they went to Oriel Park and were extremely unlucky not to get a win.
If they're a full time outfit, they don't have to do that.
I think every team has to rotate in this league. The way the fixtures are crammed in, you have to do it. So Bowes, they demonstrated their ability to go to the Champions, rest 7 first team players, and then they went and gave UCD a right pace. And even though, as we mentioned earlier, UCD probably didn't deserve to lose 3-0, but Bowes are getting the results. You said it there yourself. They have a man like Dinny Corcoran able to stick the ball in the back of the net. For me, they're genuine title contenders.
They have a fantastic management team. Whatever happens this season, Kieran, because to get this team where they are in this, it's unbelievable. Great job that Crowley's doing as well in the background. Yeah.
My fear for Bowes would be that they might not be able to keep this team together come the summer. I mentioned it already. Talbot has been super impressive since he's come back from England. Clubs are going to be watching that. Mandreu, I mean, a couple of these players as well. Leahy, they're all going to get underage call-ups. Then the scouts really do start to take interest. So that's going to be the big issue for Bowes. And we've seen it in the past where they haven't been able to hold on to their best players.
Question, Kieran. What does it take for Bowes to go full-time? To me, they're a big club in Dublin. Great attendances.
Not going to happen.
No?
No, not with the Dalymount Park redevelopment going on. And obviously, they've been burnt in the past going down that road and spending big money on players' wages. They have the right formula there now. Young players that want a chance and are taking the chance when given. And the supporters are reacting to that because they see a young team out there that's giving it their all. They're not there for a paycheck.
It's like against all odds, isn't it?
That's exactly what it is. And we've spoken about the fact that you cannot get a ticket to Dalymount at the moment. And everything is just falling into line for Bowes now at the moment. Yeah. It's fantastic to see. It's great for the league. But it's particularly great for Bowes, a fantastic club that's back on the rise. Rovers will have to bounce back on Friday in Oriel. But we'll move along to our next fixture. UCD 1, Dundalk 3.
Just before we do, great attendance at Tella, I have to say.
Oh, fantastic. A record league attendance for the Tella Stadium, over 6,500. So.
Yeah, fantastic. We've seen it bouncing when we've been to European fixtures there.
Yeah, so. And this game that we're about to talk about now, UCD and Dundalk, a very healthy attendance at that, over 1,100, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah, really good for the bowl, and match finished 3-1 to Dundalk. Why am I telling you about it? We've got commentary.
Yeah, we've put together a little piece, just the goals. Myself and David Lennon were on duty for Between the Stripes Match Day Live. You can give that a follow on mixlr.com/Between the Stripes and you'll get updates on when our next live broadcast will be. We were also in Talca Park on Friday for Shells Against Limerick. So here's just a little bit flavour of what you can hear on our channel. A better free kick this time, Davis. And he has Tobin making a run outside, but UCD play through the middle. Davis with an excellent ball. This could be a huge chance for UCD. And we have the opening goal of the game. And it's number 9, Yo-Yo Mare. UCD lead the champions by a goal to nil at the ball. And he'll have a chance to level the score up here after 15 minutes. Penalty to Dundalk. Holman steps up. He's up against Kearns, who's doing a bit of a dance on the line. Holman keeps his composure, buries it to the back of the net. A fine penalty from the Hoovenator. 1-1. Gatlin plays a nice one too with Kelly, and it works its way to McGrath. Oh, that's the only Cruyff turn by Duffy. Rounds the goalkeeper by Gatlin Duffy with an absolute stunning piece of solo play. Dundalk fans are on their feet. They're celebrating what they think is going to be 3 points, but it's not just the job done yet. Rogers delivers long. Kelly flicks it on for Flores. This is a big chance to kill the game off. Flores plays it inside. Georgie Kelly steps over. Georgie Kelly!
Great commentary there, Kieran. It's as good as anything you'll hear on the radio.
Yeah, I know we're going to get accusations of Dundalk bias there. I'm not going to deny it.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah, not from myself, but David Lennon there next to me. I'm sure you all heard that. A boy, Georgie, when that third one went in, he was sitting in the press box in his retro Dundalk jersey. He tried to stay as neutral as he could, but look, that's part of the fun. So, as I said, give our Mixlr channel a follow, mixlr.com/Between the Stripes, and we'll have details of our next live game coming up shortly.
Yeah, but if it's surprised when that UCD took the lead, but Yo-Yo was left in a lot of space, Kieran.
It was a beautiful team move from UCD. They took a couple of quick free kicks early on that Dundalk seemed to be very slow to react to, and they were punished. Conor Davis in particular was very impressive. We associate Davis as that real target man, the man that came in and replaced Georgie Kelly last season, but he played very deep. He played almost like a number 10, and he was linking the play, and he set up this goal wonderfully for Madde, who as you said had a very, very good game, was having a great season. UCD were ultra impressive. They just ran out of steam as the game went on. Dundalk themselves, I thought it was a good all-round team effort, and some of the decisions Vinnie Perth made are really paying off. I thought Jarvis was superb at left back. Obviously that's a big call, dropping someone like Dan Massey. But a very, very entertaining game despite what was a very dry and bumpy pitch.
Yeah, and for me, a highlight, Duffy with a Cruyff turn for the second.
Oh, you heard it there on the commentary. I lost the plot. It was just a superb piece of individualism, and what a player he is.
And a first goal for Georgie Kelly at the end.
Yeah, another really good move, good counter-attacking move. Jordan Flowers playing a little assist role there.
How did he play?
He only came on briefly, about 5 minutes to go, and we all thought he was going to kind of come in as a bit of a destructor and break up the play in midfield, but he got forward, and he showed a genius little touch inside for Kelly. Kelly stepped over the ball, allowed it onto his left foot, and then he smashed it into the bottom corner. It was a great way to end the game, but as I said, everyone chipping in from Dundalk, both the players that started and the players that came off the bench, so it's starting to come together now for Dundalk.
Yep, maybe just clicking up there now, and the pressure, they wanted to pile the pressure on Rovers, weren't they?
Moving along, Waterford 2, Derry City 2. Very entertaining game, this one too, at the RSC.
Yeah, good game, this one. Parkhouse opened the scoring for Derry.
He's impressed me since he's come into the league.
Yeah, and we know that Derry are not the weak side that they used to be away from home. They've a bit more steel about them now. But then a man that needed a goal, if ever anybody needed a goal, and it was a hairy pass to him, Akinade equalised 1-1.
And what a goal it was too. Akinade just seemed to draw the defender in and let him think he was almost running out of steam. And then he's turned on the afterburners, left him for dead, takes one touch and tucks him to the bottom corner with the side of his foot. A brilliant, brilliant goal.
Darren Cole looked to have won it with an amazing curling effort.
Goal of the season contender, that one. That was super.
Yeah, but Waterford never gave up and equalised at the end after Drennan was brought down and the penalty was scored by Duggan. 2-2, Kieran.
Yeah, Waterford, a good week for them after what was, as we said, just a horrible piece of news to them off the field. But at least they're getting back on track now in the league, and maybe they can look to get into Europe again for next season. As for Derry...
Are they allowed next season?
John, don't start that now. As for Derry, they're definitely banging that top four race, as we said on last week's show.
Yeah, they're in a real battle for Europa League.
Could there
places.
Be an argument made that they could maybe sneak up on the top three and get into any title race, maybe?
Well, I've been impressed with them so far, but...
You said it yourself, they're showing a steal away from home that they haven't shown in previous years.
They are, but I think they needed to do better than they did against Rovers at home, you know, to... For me to
yeah,
be
I just
them
feel they haven't got
contenders.
The squad depth compared to the other sides. No. Even I look at Bo's squad, and we've said it there. They made 7 changes going to Oriel, and they have so many good young players coming through there. I think it's a good squad, no matter what the age profile is. I just look at Derry, and I'd worry if someone like a McNamee or a Parkhouse got injured. I'd just be worried for them.
I have to say, though, the streets ahead of where they were last season.
Oh, yeah. Again, it's great to see. They're getting great crowds at the Brandywell. There's a good feel around the place, and it's having a good impact all around. Somewhere it's not going so well is Turner's Cross. Small turnout for this one, and it was a dire game by all reports. 0-0 against Sligo.
Yeah, but to be honest, it doesn't tell totally the story, because I think they're a bit unlucky to draw this. Like, Sligo could have won this, Kieran, because... Ronan Coughlin, he should have headed in, but he went straight at McNulty, and then he hit the post in the second half, so they had the chances.
Yeah, former Cork man, so maybe out to prove a point, but obviously we'll probably touch on Cork now again in a second. But for Sligo, I think Liam Buckley will be the first man to admit he hasn't been able to get that attacking emphasis going at all this season.
No.
They're really struggling to create chances.
Cork's chances came from a Cummins header that was saved by Mitchell Beeney, and Darren Rainsford, he should have won it at the
should
end
have
for
won
Cork.
It, yeah.
Yeah, they'd be disappointed with that. And yeah, another bitterly disappointing result for Cork. And what worries me is that the fans are going to slip away. The numbers.
Yeah, that's what happens, I'm afraid. But if they're still getting over 2,000 at a game, it's still, you know, we'd be delighted with that.
Well, there won't be any more than that watching 0-0 draws against Sligo, Kieran.
No, and you just wonder what's coming there for Cork, because it's not really showing any upturn at the moment. As for Sligo, again, they've been okay at the back this season, but just not able to put the ball in the net, and their position in the table probably won't change too much going forward. Another team that's struggling to get anywhere in the table at all is Finn Harps, and they were again held, they were scoreless again. This time it was at home, as St. Pat's put 2 past them to win 2-0.
Yeah, they're in dire trouble, Kieran.
They're really in danger of getting cut adrift now.
Yeah, well, they are adrift. They're cut adrift already. And to me, I can't see much hope out there for them.
No, I think if UCD can get another win on the board, and Harps are still looking for that first win, I think they're probably looking for a Hail Mary already this early on in the season, and that's not good, because you don't want teams being that far off the pace.
As for the match itself, Clifford opened the scoring, a shot from distance to make it 1-0, and when Shaw was fouled in the box, Drennan scored the resulting penalty to make it 2-0, but for me, I think Harps are looking doomed already. I know it's very early, but they're in dire straits.
Yeah, well, they have the derby against Sligo this weekend. It is in the showground, so unfortunately they don't have home advantage for this one. But Sligo are struggling at the moment. Maybe Harps can go up there and impose their game on them and come away with something. But as I said, they really are hoping the teams ahead of them don't get any further ahead, because it's starting to look very, very ominous now for Finn Harps. But we'll move along to the first division, John, and something of a surprise result this one. Athlone Town were battered, in all honesty, 4-0 by Galway.
The bubble has burst, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think you've been saying this the last couple of weeks, that it just seems to have reached a point now where it's going the other direction.
Yeah, I know I tipped Athlone for this, but it was almost too good to be true, the start that they made after from where they were last season. Said this along, but Project DNA, 4 goals.
You're probably a big fan of Project DNA, are you?
No, not
at all.
But one man I am a big fan of, Vinnie Farty, and he got amongst the goals. Kim Murphy, Connor Melody, and Wilson Waweru. He got the fourth. What a result for Galway. That might just be the start that they need to start creeping up the table.
Because just like in the Premier League, you don't want teams getting cut adrift. And if Galway can even just kind of stay within a picture of the playoff place, it's good. It keeps attendances high and keeps interest high. But just to go to Fatterley there, as you mentioned him, we were having this discussion the other day coming back from Cove, because we're feeling maybe Longford, the one area that might be lacking in is a striker. And you look around the first division and there's some good strikers in it, but they're in teams at the moment that are struggling to create chances. And you just wonder if they were to move to one of the more established sides in the division at the moment, what they could do. And Fatterley is one of them.
Are you tapping him up, Kieran?
I hope he's listening. Fatterley is one of them. Conor Ellis looks like a decent prospect as well for Limerick, but that's a side struggling to create chances too. And obviously Cabinteely, they're not struggling to create chances. Rob Manley's tucking them away, so he's another one that's really making a name for himself. But there's some good strikers in this first division.
There is, yeah. Some good finishers. There's some good players, Kieran. We've seen a fair few on our travels this season, and One player that's made headlines again here is Dylan McGlade. I know he was anonymous against Longford Town, but hat-trick here against Drogheda.
You could say he took a week off against Longford. Way.
Oh, no, Kieran. You'll be getting us on all sorts of trouble. 3-1 here. Like I say, McGlade hat-trick, including a penalty. Luke Gallagher with one for Drogheda. But, you know, Bray needed that after an absolute lacklustre performance at Longford.
Yeah, I think I might have called this one as a draw, but in hindsight, probably expecting this result on paper, Bray having the home advantage. And they just had a rocky couple of weeks, but from a Bray point of view, it's good to see their big name players getting back on the score sheet in McGlade there, and you'll be looking to the likes of Paul Keegan now and the more established, experienced players just to step up over the next couple of weeks and put that bad run behind them. And this was a good way to go about it. Again, for Drogheda, they looked like they were just starting to get going, but this is a disappointing result for them.
Yeah, they will be disappointed with that. Shelburne, another team that are coming into form, 2-0 against Limerick, Calmore and Lachlan Fitzgerald.
Yeah, as I said, this was another Between the Stripes matchday live commentary game, and this could have been a rout only for Jack Brady. As you know, Brady is a former player of the year at Shelburne, and the Shelburne fans actually, a number of times during the game, stood up and started applauding him and even singing his name at one stage. That's how good his performance was. He was absolutely amazing. It was one of the best goalkeeping performances I've ever seen. If you get a chance to check out the highlights on Shell's TV, make sure you do that. But amazing performance from Brady, but probably the only one that really stood out for Limerick. They were dire on the day.
Kieran, if Brady continues this kind of form, he'll be playing Premier Division football in no time. Because we rated him when he was at Longford. Obviously went to Limerick to Premiership for Premier Football, and look, he's doing a very, very good job in goals there.
We have to talk about Shells though, because we've criticised them a few times early on in the season after a poor start. This was the game where they finally looked like the team we all thought they were going to be. Very interesting change of shape. Ryan Brennan was actually playing as the target man. Kieran Godough was on the bench, so it was Ryan Brennan leading the line.
That's a massive call.
It worked perfectly. Brennan was unplayable at times in this game, although you'd question the Limerick defending. But Brennan led the line. Just behind him then was James English, Carl Moore, and I can't remember who the other player was, but they had a really attacking front four. And then the fullbacks, Aidan Freed was playing right full, so he's come into the team. And Fitzgerald was out at left full. And it was just relentless pressure from Shelburne. Really, really good to watch. And if they can keep up that type of football going forward, they are going to be the team that we all thought they were going to be. But you have to balance the argument. Limerick, there was clearly a lack of effort from certain players, and we probably understand now why that situation is.
Yeah.
So you have to gauge Shells, I suppose, against a better quality opposition.
Wexford 0, Cabinteely 2. Cabinteely keep marching on, Kieran.
As I said, they found the dangerous habit of knowing how to win games. That's what Cabinteely have done this season. They might win in the prettiest style, but they're grinding out results, and they've been consistent.
And in Rob Manley, they've got a man that knows where the goal is.
You just wonder how long they can keep a hold of him.
Well, yeah, they'll be desperate to keep him till the end of the season. But
I know a couple of drunken Longford fans were talking to Joe Manley outside of Cove, and they were saying, what's the story with your brother?
Yeah. Sign him up. Yeah, no, he's doing very, very well for himself. And why would he want to leave this season when he is doing well and making all the right headlines? Jack Watson with the second. Another red card for Wexford, though. Owen McCormack seen red.
God, their discipline is awful this season. Jack Watson is a player I like. Cabinteely, genuine title/promotion contenders, John?
Well, you have to say so, based on the position in the league, the top of the league.
Because I have to say, most people I've spoken to and I've asked this question don't think so. They think Cabinteely had run out of steam.
Yeah, I'm not so sure they will. They're going very, very well. Why can't they be? Yeah, I don't see a reason why they can't. If they can keep that, if they keep the likes of Manley injury free, then yeah, Manley gets injured, forget it, because I can't see where the goals are coming from.
Will it come down to squad depth then? Even taking out Manley out of the equation, if one of two or three other players were to get injured, even if they're not the key men,
yeah,
could that be a killer blow to Cabinteely?
Could be.
They obviously don't have the same sort of resources as the Shells, the Brays, the Longfords of this world.
I just think it's an amazing storyline, because at the beginning of the season when we were doing our predictions, we had them really written off, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, and look where they are now, top of the league. Shows what we know about it.
We'll move along to the next one, John, and that was the scoreless draw of the weekend, Cove against Longford Town. Not much to report, really.
And it was lovely that neither of us were on media duties, so we could enjoy the match and yeah, we might have
got a photo with Tom,
League of Ireland legend. Did he ask us for a photo? No, he didn't. It was the other way around. No, what a legend. Yeah, and lovely to see Cove give him a new jacket.
Yeah, brilliant stuff, and a free Easter egg as well. We didn't get one, and we didn't get any goals. No. And there was very little to report. If anything, would you argue Cove were probably the team better value for 3 points to hit the post?
I don't think so. I think that was the right result.
Yeah.
Look, I think this is going
to
be the way.
Pitch was very, very poor. I hate to be the one that keeps going on about pitches, but if I'm going to say it about one team, I have to say it about the others. It was like a bunker on a golf course in some places.
Yeah, it wasn't great, I have to say. But Longford, I think that they are looking extremely strong at home. Very, very strong at home. And away, they're grinding out these draws. And
well, the only three places Longford have dropped points has been Cabinteely, Limerick, and Cove. Three of the worst pitches in the first division.
But
Longford play a particular style of play, John.
Yeah,
they get it down and they play it, and that was not possible in
impossible at Cove. No, the ball.
They're not just
bubbling.
My words. Go and listen to Neil Fenn's interview with the club post match, and he commented on the pitch and said it was very difficult to wait the passes, etc.
Was Jamie Doyle injured? Because you thought
Doyle was injured.
Yeah, that's
so
a shame.
Longford without a recognised striker.
Yeah, because that would have been ideal. That type of game, it would have allowed Neil to go a bit more direct, and instead we saw. Yeah, look, he'd be delighted to get a 0-0, I think, to be honest, after that match.
Yeah, they're the points that could add up at the end of the season. But look, we still have our interviews with Mike Ahern to come. He's going to be updating us on the situation at Limerick, and we'll hear from James Rogers ahead of Dundalk against Shamrock Rovers on Friday. But it's that time of the week again. It's the St. Mel's Brewery prediction game. John, you pasted me again last week. I'm a bit like Finn Harps. I'm in danger of getting cut adrift at the bottom. You're 8-4 ahead, so let's see what I can do to change that this week.
Well, it's lovely to know that normal service has been resumed, Kieran, after a bit of a stuttering start to the season from myself.
We'll start with the first division. Bray against Cabinteely. Bit of a local derby, this one.
I'm looking at my Premier League. You've thrown me here, Kieran, with that one. But Bray against Cabo. I'm going to go with a tricky, because Cabo are top, but can they stay there? Bray win.
What are you judging that on? What are you basing that on? Is it just the home advantage?
I think so, Kieran.
But decent at home, Bray.
Yeah, decent at home. Dylan McLeod hat-trick. He's going to be full of confidence.
And we all know what he done against Cabinteely last year with that social media sensation goal.
Well, he's a confidence player, isn't he, Dylan? So, I think he'll do well in this one. Yeah, I think Bray to win that one.
I'm not sure on this one. Going for the draws last week cost me because a lot of the games went the other way. Cabinteely have been very solid and consistent no matter whether it's been at home or away. As you said, certain Bray players now, like McLeod, have just found a bit of form in the last few weeks. Just with the home advantage, I'll go for Bray, but this is going to be a tight one.
Okay. Shells host Galway. Shells, you saw them. You were very impressed with them.
Yeah.
But equally, Galway with a great win at Athlone. So, interesting to see how you're going to call this one.
It's a very young Galway team, though, this year. And with young teams, you get a lot of inconsistency in the results. I think Shells have... I've hit their stride now. I'm not saying that they're going to burn teams away in the next few weeks because, obviously, as I said, that Limerick result, you have to question maybe where the Limerick players was their heart in it. But I think Shells will definitely have enough to see Galway away.
Wexford host Athlone.
You're going for Shells?
Oh, sorry. Yes, Shells. Yeah, Shells. Sorry, Kieran. I'm getting a bit carried away here. Wexford host Athlone. To me, the wheels are well and truly off at Athlone. Not so sure everything's right in the camp there.
That's a bit harsh.
You think so?
Yeah, that's a little bit harsh. And look, as you said yourself, they had a great start to the season, but there was only so long that could go on. So maybe it's expected now that they should be in this position. But
just gone down 4-0 at Athlone. Home to Galway.
Yeah, that was that was poor. But Wexford have improved themselves in recent weeks. But look, this is probably a game between the two bottoms, what could be the two bottom sides, as it has been in previous years. Have Athlone now built up enough confidence from that start of the season that they can go away to Wexford? Or has that 4-0 Drummond just taken all the confidence out of them?
It'll be shot after that, Kieran, I think.
Athlone beat Wexford earlier on in the season. The first game of the season.
I know. And Wexford, let's face it, they've been not great, apart from one match.
Mm.
I don't know. I'm going to go for a home win, just purely home advantage, and I think Wexford will get more than one win this season. They beat Bray, wasn't it?
Two big wins. Wexford, I can't think of what the other one was, but tough one to call, John. But that's an awful result for Athlone against Galway, really, isn't it? So I think I'm going to follow you and go with the home win.
Okay. Cove host Drogheda.
These tend to be tight encounters.
Yeah.
Drogheda not full of confidence in the last few weeks. They had a mini run there, but that's been stopped by Bray.
Yeah.
Cove just ticking along, and they're just outside of that playoff picture. If they could get a big win at home, it could catapult them back into the race.
I think
Kabea is a threat for them. Whereas Drogheda maybe struggling to find a recognised striker this season. I just didn't see enough from Cove on Saturday to suggest maybe that they're going to hit their stride. I think a draw could be a fair result here.
I think Kabea will, with a winner there against Drogheda.
Okay,
I'm a bit concerned about Drogheda. The defence is a bit...
Yeah, they're not the team they were last season. I think that's fair to say.
No.
For whatever reason.
Dylan McGlade against them. Obviously, don't like people running at them. Yeah, I'm going to go with a Cove victory.
Okay. Let's go to Limerick against Longford, and then we'll hear from Mike Ahern.
Okay, well, Longford Town at home. They've been excellent this season, Kieran.
Yeah.
Have they conceded a goal at home? No.
No.
No. And they've won all the matches.
They've only conceded two all season.
Yeah, conceded two at sea. Look, I think if they can get somebody scoring goals for that team, they will be...
Yeah, a few injury worries at the moment. Well. Sam Vernon's going to be out for a couple of weeks. He would have been a makeshift striker.
They're hoping to get Dobbs
back. Should be back as far as I know. For me, I found it hard to call the games this weekend, but I'm not finding it hard to call this one because with the situation going on at Limerick, you just wonder what type of team's going to turn up at all. I think Longford win this comfortably. I'm going to say 3-0 Longford.
I cannot see Limerick being up for this at all.
No.
Kieran, you know, things like what's going on there will have a big effect on the way the team plays.
Yeah.
It might not be all 11 of them. All it needs is a couple of them to be thinking, you know, I can't even afford to run my car this week. And that's all they'll be thinking about, you know. And it certainly won't help that team who... to be honest, if they had been paid everything hunky-dory, I'd have still probably gone for a Longford Town win.
Yeah, even from the opening game between these two teams, Longford were probably slightly better side on a poor pitch down in Limerick.
Yeah,
Longford came away more disappointed from Limerick from that fixture. So when Longford are going to play them at home, you'd naturally fancy Longford, but especially under the circumstances. So I think we're both going for Longford wins. And no better time now to go and hear from our Limerick man, local journalist down in Limerick. It's Mike Ahern joining us now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. So, Mike, obviously we have to address the widespread rumours that are going around on social media this evening ahead of tonight's show. Rumours that Limerick FC players are maybe contemplating a strike over unpaid wages. Obviously, you broke that story last week regarding the issues with the wages. Have you got any type of update on potential strike action?
Well, look, as I understand it, I did speak to a couple of players in the last 24 hours. It's a case of not training at the moment. And simply for some players, Kieran, that means not being affording the chance to train because they're not getting paid, so they can't put petrol in their car, so therefore they can't even drive to training. And when you don't get paid for 4 weeks, it's very hard to summon up effort on the pitch, and it's very hard to find the funds to fill the car or pay your insurance or pay your costs or just generally to live your life properly. So I don't think anybody will blame Limerick players for this. I suppose it took a while to break, even though we'd known the situation was emerging over the past couple of weeks. Sad situation. I think we're talking about it year on year, and unfortunately it was the year that started with so much hope for Limerick supporters because of the potential investment that was coming into the club. Now, that wasn't reneged on because the investors have significantly invested since the start of the season, but as I understand it, the current chairman was due to pay the wages for last month, which didn't materialise. The wages were paid by the private investors in the opening month of the season, and it was to revert back to the investors after Pat O'Sullivan paid the March wages. That didn't happen. It still hasn't happened. And from what I understand, the wages were promised to the players this Friday by the current chairman, who also insinuated to people that he was about to announce a new CEO today. But as yet, as we talk on this Wednesday evening, that hasn't materialised either.
And Mike, how have we come to this situation? Because obviously you've mentioned there was all this talk, and we had you on at the start of the season on our pre-season shows regarding new investment coming into the club, and things look to be taking a bit of a positive upturn after what was obviously a very, very poor season on and off the field last season for Limerick. And we've already touched on it a couple of times, the great start Limerick have had in the First Division this year. So how have we come to this situation so early on in the season?
Well, I suppose it's down to the fact that the funds just simply aren't there, and that's despite Tommy Barrett. Let's not forget this now, that he had a budget agreed before the start of the season. That budget was further cut before a ball was even kicked, and I believe was even cut again after that. So the fact that the players were competing near the top of the division was an absolute miracle for some of us. The effort that they were putting in, you know, they were really nip and tuck in that game against Longford. Same situation with the Drogheda game. And, you know, the only game that they'd lost up to last weekend was Bray away, and they were really competitive in that game as well. So I think, despite what people are saying about Friday night's performance against Shells, the fact that this team are still 4 points off the top on the back of not being paid for 4 weeks, training early mornings, and that can't be forgotten either, that these players have given up huge sacrifices in their own personal lives. They train most of them before they go and do a day's work between 7:30 and 8:00 in the morning. They're in for a morning session, gym session, and you know, they find it really hard to train in the evenings because of the lack of facilities that the club have. So look, we're at this situation because the resources aren't there to match what Limerick want to do on the pitch. And unfortunately, despite the fact that most of the players are on very much part-time wages, it's a real, real worry that that simply can't be honoured, despite the fact, Kieran, as well, you know, that Limerick were punching above their weight over the last 4 or 5 years due to the significant resources that were being used.
Now, Mike, you were saying that the possibility of the players going to be paid this Friday. Is that correct, Mike?
Sorry, John, I lost you there.
Oh, sorry, I was just saying there's a possibility the players going to be paid this Friday. Is that correct?
As I understand this, the chairman did make it known to the management team that he would be in a position, after announcing a CEO on this Wednesday, that the wages would be honoured on Friday. But I suppose the worry there, John, quite simply, is the players are owed their wages then for April, just 6 days later. So whether or not the funds can be found again in such a quick turnaround time, I'm not so sure. But yes, Friday was the date that the players were told that they would be paid. So I guess it's a matter of wait and see. And you'll probably know by Saturday night in Longford and the body language of the players how that goes.
So if there's obviously been no CEO announced today. So if there's no money in the bank accounts on Friday, is there any danger to the Longford match going ahead?
Look, I think they'd probably give a bit of notice. I know that training hasn't gone as planned so far this week. So what shape the players could be in potentially for Longford, you'd have to question at the moment. If they aren't paid Friday, I mean, they'll probably give strike notice at that stage for a week later, because they simply can't carry on like this. They're trying their very best to train mornings. You know, some evenings they're putting in every bit of effort possible. They're making sacrifices on and off their pitch. Their families are making sacrifices. I know for myself as a player, if I was making that kind of sacrifice and I was still being expected to turn up and put in 100% and give it absolutely everything, you really would struggle to do that. And, you know, I don't know, and I can't speak for the players. All I can say is that they've put in Trojan effort so far, and it's a very, very pitiful situation that their wages haven't and can't be honoured at this moment in time.
Mike, I have to say, it's very rare on this show that I'm stunned by what I'm hearing, but we're talking about a club here that at the moment cannot pay their players 10 or 11 weeks into the season, and there's talk of appointing a CEO. What on earth is going on at Limerick? I think that's the bottom line here. Who is making these decisions? Because there's some crazy stuff going on, not just this season, but in the last couple of years, and it's having a really bad image, not on just Limerick, but the entire league.
Yeah, look, I completely agree. It's absolute bonkers stuff that's going on in the background. I mean, there was a three-man committee there last year. From what I believe, that's down just to the chairman's decision-making at this moment in time. Some of the decisions are questionable. Whether or not I'd question what Pat O'Sullivan's motives are, I'm not so sure. I mean, this is a man that's probably put everything that he had from a personal point of view into the club. But if he's not able to do it anymore, I think he's got to be able to walk away. And I think if he goes now, his head can be held high and people will remember him fondly. But if the situation continues to deteriorate, as it looks to be, and mind you, it is only looking to be at the moment, because nobody from the club, and that's the other side of it, has come out and said anything official with regard to this. I mean, usually we're singing from the rooftops when something positive is going on, but when it's negative, the club simply crawl under a stone. We don't get anything back from the club, particularly from a media point of view. And, you know, we've been questioned in the past about stories that we've broke, but I think quite happy to stand over absolutely any of those stories. And this one certainly isn't a story. The players haven't been paid, and who can blame them for not being happy about it?
God, you've got to feel sorry for Tommy Barrett. I mean, he's made such a great start to the season. Surely, you know, he must be contemplating his position as manager of the team at this stage.
Look, I think to be fair to Tommy, I mean, last year he came into a situation where he had managers before him like Neil MacDonald, Stuart Taylor, guys like that who spent plenty of money, and Martin Russell too, who was likely in his time to bring in players like Joey and Doe. You know, guys who were on decent money. When Tommy got the job, he literally got his budget slashed. He couldn't sign players. He's even got an embargo at the moment because of what happened last season along with Bray Wanderers. So for Tommy to have got that team to a playoff last year was a significant achievement. Yes, some would question maybe some of the tactics that were employed over the two legs against Finn Harps, but nobody can question the man and his commitment to the club. I mean, he's been involved whether it's 17s, 19s, the academy or the senior team for near on a decade now. And what he's done this year, he's molded a group of players who wanted to play for a jersey. They signed for Tommy because of his reputation and because of the way, you know, he can man-manage that squad. And he got them playing for each other, and he got the squad competing. And that's all he ever wanted, was a Limerick team that were competitive, that weren't breaking the bank, and that were living within their means. He was certainly keeping his end of the bargain by living within his means, by playing the players what many would consider meagre wages. The players were happy enough with the situation. They were responding. But, like you said, very, very hard now on the manager to be able to stand over this situation where he's got to look at the players after making promises and commitments to them at the start of the season, and the club can't honour them. He's really stuck right in the middle because, as you know, you have to keep a chairman happy as well as a group of players happy. And for me, I'd feel very, very sorry for Tommy Barrett, because the one time it looked like things were right on the pitch, they've gone very badly wrong off the pitch.
And how on earth is he supposed to motivate his team for this match against Longford this weekend? It's a crazy situation.
Well, I think the motivation comes from the fact you're 4 points off the top and you're 3 points off Longford, and if you beat them, you're level with them and you're right back in the automatic promotion race. So the motivation for any player is always to win football games and compete at the highest level that you can compete at. So from that side of things, there will be no problem with, you know, re-energising the players. But if they're not being paid, then it's a whole different ballgame, because you're asking them to give up a Saturday, give up time with their families, give up everything that they probably worked hard for during the week. They can't even take a break, and you're asking them to give it another go. Please, you know, give me one more week. And it's very hard to keep going back to the well. It's not always full of water when you go back there. And unfortunately, I think for Tommy, he found that to his detriment on Friday night. No matter how much he was willing them to go and play very, very well against Shelburne, it just simply wasn't there, because at the back of their minds, they hadn't been paid. And look, that was reflected in the performance. Nobody blames them. And let's just hope this situation gets sorted out, because I, for one, from looking at the First Division this season, believe that Limerick, even in their current guise, can still be very, very competitive.
So we're looking at Friday then, really, as the critical date in Limerick's season. It's payday, or it could be strike action then, Mike.
Yeah, look, that's only from what I understand. As I say, the club haven't said anything official. I mean, the players have been silent as well, and who would blame them, because that seems to be the culture among League of Ireland clubs, that, you know, you be quiet or else you're being disrespectful. So from that point of view, nobody really can say for sure what is happening. For all we know, the wages could be paid this evening, they could have been paid this morning, but there's nothing official. And from what I understand from the players that I've spoken to, as of late last night, there was certainly no developments on that front, and they had been told that they would be paid on Friday. So I think, yeah, you're correct in saying, as far as most of the players understand, they will get their wages on Friday.
Yeah, look, Mike, I really would have liked to have spoken more about Limerick's on-field exploits so far this season, but I'm afraid we've ran out of time. We have an action-packed show tonight, so we're going to have to leave it there. Just final comment on that. As you know, I was doing live commentary on the game last Friday with James Donnelly, and you could see during the game, we commented on it quite a few times, the body language of the players wasn't right, and this was before this news broke, and obviously Mike then was the one to break that news on social media. So I'd have huge question marks over how the Limerick players and the Limerick management, more importantly, how they encourage and motivate their players for this Saturday's game. So it's a worrying situation, but hopefully we might see some type of resolution by the end of the week. Mike, thanks very much for joining us, and keep up the good work on reporting on Limerick.
Thanks very much, Kieran and John.
BetweenTheStripes.ie is sponsored by Diaga. Based in Buncrana, County Donegal, Diaga are world leaders in top-class logo and graphic design, website building, film production, illustration, and much more. For further information, please visit Diaga.ie.
So that's the First Division coverage concluded on this week's show. John, let's go to our Premier Division fixtures as part of our St. Mel's Brewing Prediction Game. Of course, St. Mel's sponsors here of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. You can find their website on stmelsbrewing.com. They're on Twitter at St. Mel's Brewing, and they're on Facebook as well. And make sure you pick up a bottle of their fine craft beer. And also a final reminder about our competition. If you subscribe to Between the Stripes LOI podcast on iTunes and leave a review in the month of April, you could win a mixed crate of St. Mel's beer. John, Bowes against Waterford.
This could be a tricky one for Bowes because Waterford looked good against Cork, I have to say. And there's signs that they're just sort of finding their feet at the moment.
Is this the sort of game that's going to define whether Bowes are the real deal in terms of a title race or not?
I think so, yeah. If they are, they win this. Okay? This will be close, Kieran. But I think I might just give it to Bowes. But it'll only be by one goal, I think.
Yeah, Waterford, two good results now in a row. That win against Cork and then the draw against Derry, obviously a home against Derry. Some people might argue that's not the best result in the world, but they were behind in that game and got a late equaliser, so they'll be more than pleased with that point. But overall this season, Waterford have been quite inconsistent. Whereas Bowes, they are where they're in the table through consistency. So I fancy Bowes for this one, John.
Okay, we'll both go with Bowes. Derry host Cork. Well, this could be another massive game for Caulfield, you know.
I think this could be the one that really lands him in trouble.
He's very lucky with his fixture on Monday because he's got Harps at home on Monday. But if he drops anything there, the end could be...
Forget about that, because this could be the game. You're going to the Brandywell devoid of all confidence against a Derry team that's right up for it at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at this one and I can see a big scoreline in favour of Derry. This is the game where Cork probably might go up to the Brandywell and say, let's prove these people wrong and put in a real effort, but I'd still expect Derry to nick it. But I really do fancy Derry to get a couple of goals at least against this Cork side, so I'm going with a big Derry win.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be big, Kieran, but and I think for Cork's sake that they have to get something there, but I can't see it, Kieran. I'm going to go with a Derry win.
Okay, just in case it's a tight one this week in the game, let's go with a scoreline prediction on that one. I'm going to go with 3-0 to Derry City.
Wow, okay. No,
that would be a headline, wouldn't it?
Yeah, wouldn't it just, yeah. 1-0, Kieran.
1-0, oh, yeah. Sneaky 1-0. Mm. Pats against UCD has the look of a nice footballing game, doesn't it?
It does. I'm liking the look of Pats. I'm liking the look that the fact he's playing Shaw with Drennan, yeah, as he should have done from the start of the season.
Yeah, we called that early, didn't we?
Because, to me, Gary Shaw is the kind of striker that is perfect for that team.
Yeah.
You look at their attacking fullbacks, their crossing ability, Shaw will lap that up. Yeah, and I'm delighted to see him up front with Drennan. Pats win.
Yeah, I think this will be a narrow Pats win. And I really do like the look of this UCD team, so I was tempted to give them a shout in this one. But this is the time of the year now with exams coming up for players and this congested fixture list where you often do see UCD struggle. It's always been the case down the years.
Do you think they have a little bit of a soft centre, UCD?
No.
It can be got at? No?
No.
You don't think that?
No. They showed last season in the First Division they were able to be a little bit nasty when they wanted a time, so they were able to leave the boot in and... They're all well-built young fellas, you know. They're using the gym facilities to the best of their abilities up there. And they're as fit as anything in the division. Now, they did run out of steam against Dundalk in the last 15 minutes the other day. But they kept going. They kept throwing everything they had at until that third goal went in. So don't be surprised if UCD walk away with something from Inchicore. But I just fancy Pats now that they've clicked in the last few weeks to nick this one. So I'm going with a Pats win.
Yeah, Pats win for me as well, Kieran. Sligo host... Harps, who are desperate for anything.
Is it too much to say that this could be do or die for Finn Harps already at this stage of the season?
Well, they've got a tough trip to Cork on the Monday, so they'll be wanting
just on that. How unfair is that?
Yeah,
for a part-time side.
Yeah, it's awfully unfair, but it's just the way it's always been, Kieran.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, this is what makes me think that part-time sides cannot win this league. It's just too much to ask. You talked about Bowes making the seven changes for, you know, fixture congestion and look.
I wouldn't like to be asking this Finn Harps side to make seven changes.
No. Sligo against Harps. Have you seen enough in Sligo that they can win this, Kieran?
If it's going to be a win, it's going to be a narrow one because they really are struggling to score goals. You'd imagine there'll be a decent turnout for this one. Would have been quite a local affair.
Crowds are disappearing at Harps already.
Yeah, that's worrying.
Yeah.
What's disappearing quickly too is their management team. Another member of the team, I think it was Paul Hegarty this time, sent to the line recently. Yeah,
it's just ridiculous.
We won't get into ridiculous, that. We won't get into that again. But
our listeners hear it nearly every week.
Yeah.
They know what we think of that management team, and it sets an atrocious standard for the team.
I'm just going to go with a Sligo win. I just think Harps are just totally lacking in confidence at the moment.
Yeah.
Whereas Sligo, it's not gone to plan, but there's something there. You can just see, you know, you can see what Liam Buckley wants to do with them. Yeah. Whereas this Harps team, you just don't know where the points are going to come from.
And I'm really disappointed in Harps this season because they've some good players in that side, but they're just, nothing's working.
They just look like
a beaten team.
Yeah, it just happens sometimes. And the problem with a team like Harps is once they go one down, that's it.
Yeah.
The heads drop. They know they're not going to get back in the game. They might be lucky to get away with a point, but they're never going to win the game.
We raved about their defence last season, and they've been pretty awful this season.
There's been a lot of chopping and changing too to try and find the right formula. Obviously, you have to do that as a manager in this situation. You have to try everything, but it doesn't help at the same time when you don't have a settled side. So Sligo, they're a little bit more settled. I'll go with a home win.
Okay. The massive one, Kieran. Friday night. Dundalk versus Shamrock Rovers.
Thoughts?
Wow, I can't wait.
We'll see it. We'll be in Bala.
We'll just have to...
Bit of mob draw of the game.
Exactly. Yeah. We'll work it out, Kieran. We'll find a way.
Is it fair to say that all the pressure is actually on the home side, Dundalk, going into this game?
Well, I don't think so. No? I mean...
You don't think so?
No, look at... Rovers are coming off a defeat against Bowes.
Rovers are 7 points ahead of Dundalk.
I know. But I just think there's pressure all around in this one. It's a massive match.
Yeah, it is.
Kieran.
It's a massive game. But I actually do strangely believe that all the pressure's on Dundalk.
Right, okay.
They have to try and cut this gap. Rovers have a decent record in Ireland in recent years. The big issue now for Rovers is they're going to be missing a couple of players going into this one. And Dundalk, they're showing signs that they're getting back to their best. And Michael Duffy, if he's let play, he will destroy any team in this league. So I'm just going to go the way of Dundalk. Probably people won't be surprised to hear me say that. But this is going to be... I hope it's not one of them cagey encounters.
Yeah.
I really hope both teams go out and play a good brand of football. But I just see Dundalk making it.
I think it's going to be a great match. I mean, it is going to be cagey. I think those two suspensions, I think especially Lee Grace, because he's been brilliant.
And Bulger could be out too.
Bulger, yeah.
And he's been brilliant this season.
Yeah.
He's their when they don't have him, they don't really have another hole in play. They're playing Dylan Watts there, but that's not his game.
No, it's not.
And you're looking at someone like Chris Shields, who just absolutely dominates midfield through both his desire and his quality on the ball. That is often forgotten about Chris Shields, how good he is on the ball. So I just think it's falling into place for Dundalk at the right time.
I think they'll beat Shamrock Road.
Okay.
I think they will. It's just the suspensions for me. That would be the worry. I'm taking Lee Grace out.
Grace has probably been the best defender in the league this season.
Yeah, I'm not convinced about Lopez.
No?
No, I'm not 100% about him either. So I just think Dundalk might edge this one.
Okay.
It'll be close.
Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed that preview of that game, John. And we're going to go now and hear from our final guest of the evening. And I'd be very surprised if he says anything other than a Dundalk win.
Just before that, Kieran, I have 10 homes there.
Ah, go away. I'm sick of hearing this every week. Let's go to our final guest. It's James Rogers. So our usual Dundalk FC man, James Rogers, joins us once again on Between the Stripes LOI podcast to preview what is potentially the game of the season so far this coming Friday night at Oriel Park as Dundalk hosts Shamrock Rovers. James, you're welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So I'd imagine the excitement now is really building in County Louth for this one. Any chance it could sell out on Friday?
I'd say a good chance. the tickets are, you know, there's no online tickets available. I believe Shamrock Rovers have sold out their quota, so I'm not really sure how they're going at the minute, but it's one of those games where, as a, be it a player or a supporter, if you can't get yourself up for this one, you know, you never will.
Yeah, so we were both at the game on Monday. I think fair to say an impressive performance from Dundalk. I see Vinnie Parth has made some comments after the game that he feels Dundalk's rhythm is slowly coming back. Would you agree with that? Are we starting to see more of the Dundalk of last season?
Yeah, I think definitely. Obviously, the injuries they've had, I think any team would miss, you know, their three main midfielders, and they've, you know, they've had injury problems as well with Michael Duffy and John Mountney at the stage. The likes of Duffy wasn't training for a few weeks down. You can see the benefit now of him training week in, week out. He was really good against UCD, and you know, obviously the problems in midfield, I suppose it was affecting the forward line. I suppose Pat Hoban has had his maybe critics at times this season, but a lot of it's just down to lack of service at times and him having to come maybe a bit deeper than he would have last season. And I think, you know, slowly the old rhythm is starting to return, and you know, probably at no better time now.
I was going to ask you a little bit later on about Patrick Hoban, but we'll go to it now since you've brought it up there. Obviously, his form so far, probably not what it was last season. He's scored quite a few penalties already this season, but from open play, he's only got the single goal. So, Georgie Kelly coming off the bench on Monday and getting a fine strike to seal the game, and he looked impressive when he's come off the bench. Do you think there's any potential for Georgie Kelly getting more of a run now in the coming weeks, especially with this congested fixture schedule we have?
He probably deserves it, but like having said that, in a few of the matches, I thought Hoban was actually, you know, one of the Dundalk's better players. I suppose when you've come off a season where you score 29 league goals, you'll always be judged on your goal return. But overall, I think he's been quite good at holding the play up and bringing people into play. It's just, I suppose, when you look at the signings the Dock have made and maybe had to throw them in earlier than they would have liked. I think in previous years, even when the likes of Robbie Benson signed for the club, he didn't go straight into the team. It was nearly summer before he started getting a run, and it was mainly Europe he was getting a run at that stage, you know. So the likes of the Jordan Flores had to be thrown in straight away, Sean Murphy, etc. That, you know, maybe they would have been held back for a few weeks and, you know, get up to the speed of waiting to Dock do things. And that wasn't an option this year, so I think that sort of maybe unsettled things. But you know, the win on Friday, they're not in a bad place overall.
Yeah, and obviously the other big difference from last season that we've spoken about several times on the show, the setup in terms of the management team, a bit of a three-man show there, but obviously Vinny is calling the shots from what we can all see. I think it's working fine so far this season, and I agree with Vinnie Perth that the team is finally starting to get its flow, but I know this man next to me has his reservations about it. As someone that covers Dundalk week in, week out, what have you made of the setup so far this season?
Yeah, look, it's been a difficult start for them. It's obviously not a conventional management setup, but like, I do believe Vinnie Perth was the right appointment. Like, he did need a bit of continuity there. I think any manager would have struggled with the injuries he had at the start of the year. I think, obviously, Rovers are top of the league, and, you know, it's the equivalent of maybe taking Bolger, Byrne and McInniff out for them. That's what Dundalk had to deal with. And, you know, that any team at any level will miss those sort of players. And, you know, to be in a position now where, you know, they could maybe go 4 points behind with a game in hand, it's not the worst, you know. Like, I think they would have taken it a couple of weeks ago.
Are you happy to stop crying about it now, John Breyer?
No, I just think they got off to a very difficult start, Kieran. I think my point was extremely valid. You know, and you could see there was a bit of, you know, a bit of doubt as to the structure in place. That was the points I was making, Kieran.
Anyway,
I would say it's probably not, like, it's one that it's probably too soon to judge on. I get where John's sort of coming from, but I think, you know, there was talk maybe of Vinnie Perth being under pressure and that, and I think that's completely premature and unfair given the injury problems. I think any coach would have struggled with that. I think you need to give it more time, I think, to see how good or bad it is, but I think it'd be very unfair to judge it after, you know, 10, 11 matches when considering all they've had to put up with.
And I think you've got to admit, you know, from my point of view, it's a pretty hard ask to replace Stephen Kenny.
Yeah,
it is. It's like, listen, you know, it's kind of, when you look at what Kenny achieved last season, a double, like, how do you better a double? You know, it's, you know, do you do it again? You know, you could even say that's just doing the same again. But you know, it is what it is. Stephen's gone on to better things, and you know, it's an opportunity for Vinny to step up. But you know, he'd be relishing, like, this is a big chance for him now to show, you know, his managerial prowess on Friday night, and you know, a win against Rovers. You know, all of a sudden he's flavour of the week again.
Yeah, and in terms of structures and the likes, obviously there's a new CEO in at the club. Any noticeable changes since that appointment was made?
I suppose he's kind of, I haven't actually met Mark myself now, Mark Devlin, but he's just been kind of getting to know the ins and outs of the club, I suppose. I suppose the big change, and I'm sure Shamrock Rovers fans will be happy with us on Friday night, is there's been new toilets put in at the away end and at the shed end for the home supporters. So, listen, it's a minor thing, but I suppose it's a step in the right direction. I suppose he comes with a background of having worked on stadium development at Brentford, and he's already on record in his programme notes as saying he'd like to see that, you know, some development of Oriel. So hopefully that's something we see come down the line.
Yeah, if anything, his programme notes have been quite good so far. So that's one impact he's made already. It's obviously a very different club, James, to the one you started following and covering. I'm not sure how many years you're doing it now, but how big has the transformation been since you started out covering Dundalk?
Oh, well, it's amazing. Like, you know, even, you know, it's probably cliched at this point, but you look at, even, I remember, I think it was September 2012, and Dundalk went to Talla and lost 7-0, and Chris Shields that night was booed by the Dundalk supporters, you know. And, it, you know, at the time, you're wondering, will there be a Dundalk FC in 2013? And, you know, since then, the journey they've gone on, you know, like, and in many ways, that's part of the problem. Like, the modern day Dundalk fan has been spoiled because they've had cups, days out of big finals, European excursions. You know, it's just it's been the stuff of dreams. But I suppose all of a sudden, then, when you have a few negative results, it's automatically a crisis.
So James, tell us before you go, what's your prediction for Friday?
It's a hard one to call. I think after last night, you know, the suspensions are going to hit Rovers a bit hard. Obviously, for me, Lee Grace has been one of the top defenders in the league. And when I look back at the game at Talla between the two sides, it was him and Greg Bulger for me who were the two top Rovers players that night, and they could both potentially miss Friday. You know, it just disrupts them a little. I think it's a big test for Rovers. I think they have, you know, as good as their start has been, I think they've failed their three biggest tests so far, in that they've lost twice to Bohemians now. I know last night you could argue refereeing decisions played a part in that, but facts are facts. They've lost twice to Bohemians, and they failed to beat the depleted Dundalk team on home soil. And, you know, probably that night got away with one late on where maybe Dundalk should have had a penalty. So I think it's a big night for Rovers. If you look back at recent history of the league, I think the team who, you know, became champions has always had a good early season result against the reigning champion, shall we say. You think back to 2017, and Cork, you know, beat Dundalk 2-1 in Turner's Cross. You know, 2014, Dundalk went to Richmond Park in early April, won 4-1. You know, year before that, 2013, Sligo Rovers as champions had won their opening 8 league games and lost 2-0. A Pat side went on to win the league. And the year before that, Sligo beat Rovers 3-0 in early May. You know, at a time when Rovers were champions, you know, the one thing I will say about all those matches, there was at least one sending off in them for the losers, and shows how important discipline can be. So, I think if Rovers are going to, you know, show serious title contention, they need to go to Oriel Park and lay down a marker and show that, you know, we are the real deal.
James, brilliant as always, and I'm sure it's going to be an absolute cracker on Friday live on the television as well. It should be a near sold out Oriel Park, if not totally packed to the rafters. James, thanks for joining us, and enjoy the game on Friday.
Thanks very much, guys.
So, John, that brings us to the end of Series 3, Episode 10. Thanks to our three guests to join us. Some very good insight into our talking points tonight. Some great previews of the upcoming action, both in the Premier and First Division. As always, just a reminder, our sponsors are Flowmax.ie, Diageo.ie, and stmelsbrewing.com. You can find us on Twitter at Between Stripes, and we're on facebook.com/Between the Stripes. We will be back next Wednesday with another edition. Hopefully we're still in one piece, John. And just a final point that our under 14 season has come to an end.
Yeah, disappointing, but I was without my co-manager at the weekend who swanned off to do some commentary on the match, but yeah, disappointing.
Sounded like a bit of a belter though, 9-6?
9-6, yeah, well, we were 1-0 down after I think 6 seconds, so that beat Shane Long the other day. Yeah, it wasn't a great start, Kieran.
And do we mention the fact we didn't win a game all
season? No, don't tell them that.
Right, that's where we'll end it. Folks, thanks for joining us. Speak to you again next week.
Subscribe to Between the Stripes LOI podcast now on iTunes, Audio Boom, Mixcloud, Pocket Cast, or Podcast Republic, and never miss an episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Between Stripes, or like us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Between the Stripes. Add us on Snapchat. Our username is BTS1924. While for all the latest League of Ireland news and updates, you can visit BetweenTheStripes.ie. Until next week, thanks for listening.